Well, good morning. It is 8:06, and that means it's time for weather. We have Erica Martine on the line from the ABC Forecast Center.
Hello. Good morning, everybody. I hope you're all having a great start to your Thursday. We also call that Friday Eve. A great day on tap with lots of sunshine to start the day. However, be mindful of the fact that you are under the the dry area of the drought monitor. Additionally, fireworks have been banned in Summit County, so something to think about. Now, we're tracking temperatures in low 80s for today, and that's pretty much going to be the trend for the next couple of days. It looks like we'll hit mid-80s by Sunday, but today's going to be really pretty. It looks like we'll have an increase in cloud coverage from south to north once again, actually really from like a west-southwest direction towards the northeast. And that's the tail end of that monsoonal moisture we've been seeing for the past couple of days. Looks like we could see one or two scattered showers and, again, one or two isolated thunderstorms because it looks like we could see enough convection with that daytime heating. A high in the low 80s. I'm going to go with an 83 for today, 84 on Friday, and then keeping it in the mid-80s on Saturday with mostly sunny skies. Now, we also have a chance of some isolated showers on Friday, just again due to some diurnal showers, also convective heating from the daytime. Sunday we're going to climb into the mid-80s, 86 degrees, so a little bit warmer there, 85 on Monday, and then we're going to pretty much stay in the low to mid-80s from there on out. But we're tracking a couple of chances for some showers on Tuesday as well. So I'm probably going to say a partly cloudy to broken cloud day for Tuesday, and then that chance of some showers moving in. But the great news is that we have a gorgeous weekend in the forecast, mostly sunny skies. Pioneer Day is going to be gorgeous. And so enjoy. Apply sunscreen often. Stay hydrated nonetheless. And just please be aware of any fire weather. Call authorities quickly because we've been seeing so many fires out there, wildfires, either human cause or Mother Nature cause. And either way, we just have to be aware.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye, guys.
You too. That's Erica Martine with the ABC Forecast Center. Well, the display of pride banners along Heber's Main Street over the last 2 years has stirred up strong opinions both for and against the move. Heber City Council hopes to avoid some of that controversy in the future and is now considering a new banner ordinance. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more.
Fly rainbow-colored banners with the words Pride in the Wasatch back down Main Street during Pride Month last June. Public reaction was mixed. Strong opinions were voiced on both sides of the issue, with some praising the move by the city and others criticizing it for taking what they saw as a political stand on a controversial issue. Heber City Council began the process of re-evaluating the city's banner policy at the end of 2019. The current policy regarding banners concerns size, location, placement, and timing, and does little to regulate the content of the banners themselves. Pride banners were also flying in Heber this June. On Thursday, Heber City Council held public comment and discussion on a proposed new ordinance that would regulate what can and cannot appear on banners flown throughout the city. The proposal would limit city banners to promote only events sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce or to recognize federal, state, and local holidays. The language also states that promoted events must be, quote, non-political. Just like 1 year ago, public comment on the issue was lively. Several emails were read from the community, both expressing support for and opposition to allowing pride banners to be flown in Heber. Jim Mortensen spoke as a veteran and a father of a gay daughter to argue that pride banners are not political statements.
If we truly believe and truly value the gay children in our community, can we not proclaim their value through a simple banner? Human rights are not political. These pride banners tell our children, you are safe here. By emphasizing that the mighty American truth, that all men are created equal, applies equally to them as well. Yea, our American heritage, our very civic duty, is to stand against repression and to give voice to those without.
Despite nearly all of the public comments on the issue centering around the appropriateness of the pride banners, Councilmember Mike Johnston says the real issue is what is and isn't considered political is largely a matter of personal opinion. He says if the city does not set some sort of limit on what can and can't go on the city's banners, the door could be open for potentially hateful or discriminatory messaging in the future under the guise of free speech.
My concern has never been the pride banners. In fact, I support them. My concern and my willingness to look into this, the banner policy, is that we don't really have a policy. The other point I just point out is defining something that's political, it's just a matter of opinion. I mean, to me, climate change change is not political. Environmental protection is not political. Air quality and things are not political. But to some other people, they're political. How do we define these terms, and how do we avoid things that are bad and ugly, mean-spirited and discriminatory and ugly?
Heber City Mayor Killeen Potter added that when the original request for the Pride banners came to her desk, there was no city ordinance or precedent in place that would have allowed her to say no. She says it's unfortunate that the efforts by the council to better define the banner policy have been perceived as an attack on the Pride banners themselves.
I treated it like I would have treated any other civil rights banner, like a Martin Luther King. I probably could have said no, and we probably wouldn't have got sued. But in my heart of hearts, my integrity required me to treat them exactly the way I would have treated anyone else. And I'm sorry it has caused a lot of difficulty and time, but I'm also happy because I feel like it's brought to attention some people in our community who have long felt misunderstood and excluded.
At the end of their discussion, the council moved to further clarify the language determining which banners would be allowed and revisit the matter at the next city council meeting on August 4th. A link to the city council report on the proposed banner ordinance can be found at kpcw.org. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
It is 8:13. Well, Lacey Cole Ray and Park City Police Captain Phil Kirk with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Wasatch and Summit County are on the phone here to talk about a fundraising event that they're working on and a project, 60 Men in 60 Days. And Lacey Cole Ray is the manager of the Summit Wasatch Big Brothers Big Sisters organization. And Phil, you are on the board locally here. And thanks for joining us this morning.
Carolyn.
Hi, Lacey and Phil.
Yeah.
Hi. Sorry about that. Good morning. So
good morning.
You two are on the Big Brothers Big Sisters organization for Wasatch and Summit County, and you're here to talk about the fundraising event and the project 60 Men in 60 Days.
Yes. I'll go first, Phil. Thanks again for having us on, Carolyn. So Big Brothers Big Sisters holds a bowling fundraiser every March, Bowl for Kids' Sake. And of course, this March, the world changed dramatically and we didn't get to go bowling. So we're doing an event this weekend called Do Something for Kids' Sake. And we think the beauty of this event is that it's super flexible. People don't have to gather. You basically go to our site, make a donation. You can make a team if you want to, or you can just make a donation. And then on Saturday, go out into, Park City, Summit and Wasatch County and do something. Go hiking, go biking, go boating, take a nap, garden, basically whatever people like doing. Go out with the intention that you're doing it for kids' sake and to support Big Brothers Big Sisters. And then we're asking people to take a photo of themselves and post it on their social media. And we have a really smart marketing manager who is going to post those and collect those for, added fun. So
should
that's,
people,
that's the concept.
Okay. So should people register somewhere? Should they go to the site and register and make a donation and determine what they're going to do?
Yeah, that's the idea. Obviously, it's still a fundraiser. We're trying to recoup some of the loss of our bowling event. So our goal is just $15,000 right now. I just took a look. We're at a little over 4,100. So we're about 27% of our goal today. And we would love to, for some of KPCW's listeners, to help us bump that up.
Okay.
And I think you're going to link, I hope you KPCW can put these links on your website, but really the easiest way for people to find this event is just go to Big Brothers Big Sisters website, which is bbbsu.org.
Okay. And before we move on to talking with our own Captain Phil Kirk, can you tell us a little bit about just the impacts to the program that have occurred as a result of? Have you had to turn kids away? Have you had to forego certain things because of the COVID-19 impacts?
You know, right now, we have not had to turn kids away. Our funding comes from a variety of sources, so I think that as a nonprofit, we're really fortunate in that way. Where we've seen our biggest impact financially is from our the donation center side of our business. We about 30% of our revenue comes from those green bins you see all around town. We have a partnership with Savers, and because of COVID, we have not been able to sell that to Savers. So we are running at a loss, but been able to keep all of our staff on, and really we've been quite busy in enrolling new volunteers. There's been a big interest in volunteering, which is amazing. So really just trying to pivot and figure out how to enroll kids and families virtually, which we're doing. So,
sure. And yeah, how many families, children do you serve in the Wasatch and Summit County area?
About 100, between 160 and 180 a year. I think right now we're on the lower side. We're more around the 160, but, we should be about 180 by the end of the year. And I'll just speak briefly. We have two programs here, site-based mentoring and community-based mentoring. Site-based is in the school system, which will definitely be impacted by the coronavirus, but those matches are still connected and talking. And then in our community program, adults get to meet their littles and littles' families out in the community and go out and do things. And the commitment is two to four times a month.
Okay. And is it like a full day or is it an evening? What are the guidelines?
You know, it's really flexible. It's up to the child's family schedule and the volunteer schedule. So really most people are getting together, you know, on a weeknight after work a couple times a month and maybe on a Saturday or Sunday for a few hours. So it's not a full day. It's very self-directed, but Big Brothers Big Sisters staff is there to provide ongoing support. So we're not there physically when matches are going out to do an activity, but we have a connection with the child, the parent, and the volunteer always just to ensure safety and training and kind of be relationship coaches.
Yeah, sure. Give some guidance on it. Yeah. Let's move on to you, Phil. This is a really tough time for all of our nonprofits here in town, and especially when it comes to holding these traditional fundraising events. But of course, ironically, it's probably a time when more than ever we need programs like Big Brothers Big Sisters. So tell me, how did you get involved with the organization, and what's your personal experience with it?
Well, I'm one of the few that's been a beneficiary as a little and also a volunteer as a big. So I've been on both sides of the equation there and had to owe a lot to the Big Brothers Big Sisters program. It started back when I was a young kid in San Francisco. And so I've now gone on the board for the last couple of years and trying to do my part to help out. Again, I have been a volunteer as a big to a young man previously. But I wanted to also to thank our public safety partners, as the Park City Police Department, the Summit County Sheriff's Office, and the Park City Fire Department. They've all raised funds to help contribute to this, originally Bowling for Kids' Sake and now for Something for Kids' Sake fundraiser. And I want to challenge other organizations and other businesses out there to join the ranks and get involved. And I just bid on something I'm from San Francisco, and there was a silent auction opportunity for a weekend in San Francisco, get away in San Francisco with airfare and hotel at the Marriott for two nights. And I've just been in a bidding war with somebody on that one this morning. So please get online and have fun with that and make a contribution to a great cause.
Yeah, sure. So this other project you have going, the 60 Men in 60 Days, that's not speed dating, I guess.
No, it's a very exciting title. I know every year I laugh and say, wow, this sounds really fun. But we are trying to recruit 60 men to become big brothers over 60 days, which this campaign began June 15th and goes through August 15th. But Carolyn, one thing we see really nationwide is that women volunteer at a little bit higher rate than men. And for Big Brothers Big Sisters, what that means is that boys who need a mentor wait longer for that mentor than girls do. So right now in some of Wasatch counties, we have six young men who are on our wait list wanting to have a mentor. And we need some big brothers to step up. So if you want to be a mentor to a young man who could really use one, then please look at our website and call me. I'd love to be able to get some of those 60 men.
And is it always the same gender, basically? I mean, you don't, you wouldn't have like a female helping to mentor a young boy or any of that? It just doesn't go that way? Or
not, what? No, we do same gender matches. The only exception is we do have a program, we call it Big Couple. Big Couple. So if a couple wants to volunteer and mentor one child, we'll do that, and we match them with a boy, and that's again because boys wait longer.
Okay.
So yeah.
And
yeah.
So just circling back, you haven't had to deny any boys in this area at this point for services, or do they just have to wait longer to get into the program?
There's always a wait list, to be honest. COVID has not affected that at all. In fact, what we're seeing is actually more people are interested in volunteering. So financially, we need more funds, but no one is necessarily waiting any longer due to COVID. But the fact that they have to wait at all really speaks to just the need for more people to get involved in this kind of volunteering.
Yeah, sure.
And I do just want to say, I think for people out there thinking, oh, this is might not, you know, I might not be qualified, or this might be too much time. It's not a ton of time. And I think that our volunteers really get as much out of being matched in Big Brothers Big Sisters as the child does. It's rewarding, it's challenging, and really it's a way to volunteer where you're taking on a friend, you know, and having that human connection and building bridges in our community is really worthwhile, and I think very meaningful to people, especially in a time like now when we're all seeking meaning and maybe examining ourselves in ways that we haven't. So,
So there isn't a certain
volunteers.
Yeah. So there's not a certain profile of person that works best or has the most success with doing this. It's all kinds of people with all kinds of interests, and it's just sharing those with these children. Or
we make matches. We try to make very thoughtful matches based on people's strengths, what we think a volunteer can help a child with. But the main thing is saying I'll be consistent, I'll be dependable, and I'll be, you know, I'll be tenacious and keep going. So it's 1 year, the commitment, again, hanging out with a little 2 to 4 times a month. And right now some of our volunteers are meeting their littles virtually. We are allowing matches to meet in person, but with some COVID related guidelines. So things are different right now, but really having a mentor and having someone to help you and believe in you, I think is more important now than ever.
And I guess just finally, what about the children? If someone's listening and they think that their child would benefit from this, how do they register or apply or the system there?
They can give us a call in our local office if that's easy, 435-649-9366. Everybody speaks English and Spanish, so call in. But most people, or I shouldn't say most people, but lots of people, good information on our website, bbbsu.org. You can apply online. There's a lot of information about why mentoring is good for kids and how we work with parents as partners. And of course, our fundraiser this weekend to help fund all this good stuff we're doing, Carolyn.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let me just circle back to Phil for a second, because having been a participant on both sides of it, Phil, what when you were a kid, what were the things that you were interested in doing with your mentor?
You know, I'm still a friend with that. My mentor, Joe Jezikiewicz, who lives in California, and he was a role model for me, especially as far as education, and he really opened up my opportunities for me to pursue an education and also then experience in the Navy. He was a naval officer, something that I did, and actually my little, the one that I volunteered volunteered as a big wood. He went into the military, into the Navy, too. And I think those impressionable young people that need somebody there that can be not only their mentor but their friend, that can last a lifetime. And I personally can attest to that. I'm still in touch with my big brother. And we've got people out there, young people that really need that kind of help. If you don't have the time right now to volunteer in that capacity, we certainly need you to donate to our Do Something for Kids' Sake fundraiser and get out there on that silent auction and help out any way you can.
Yeah, well, we'll be sure to post that with a recap of this interview and get that on our website to share it as well. Thank you. Anything else, Phil or Lacey, you'd like to say?
I don't think so. Just thank you very much. We really appreciate being on, and I appreciate Phil's service and that of our other community partners. And I hope this will inspire more people to get involved.
Okay. Thank you
Caroline.
So much. All right. Thanks, folks. Have a good one.
Thank
Bye
you.
Now.
Bye-bye.
That's
Bye.
Lacey Cole-Ray and Phil Kirk with Park City Police Department, talking about the Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Wasatch County fundraiser and silent auction. You're listening to KPCW, the local news hour. It's 8:29, and the Weilerman School of Discovery has a new executive director. Steve Williams is joining us this morning to talk about his new position and what the charter school is doing as part of their preparation to open doors to students this fall. Thanks for coming on, Steve.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for taking some time with me.
Absolutely. So we're hearing floods of reports on back-to-school challenges and uncertainties. I mean, in the national news, the local news, regional news, the state issued a mask mandate for students and faculty and staff, and now all the public and charter schools in the state must submit a detailed return-to-school plan to the state board. And in addition, so much of the COVID-19 situation remains fluid with, you know, guidance changing all the time, science coming from public health and CDC guidelines. This is a crazy time to be taking on a new role.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's certainly not something that I anticipated back in January when I accepted this position. But it's like everything in schools. We take on challenges and we face them with hope and optimism and a good group of people around us, and we move forward. So
yeah,
we have submitted our plan. We submitted it early. We passed it through our board back in early June, and have submitted that, and then have been working, throughout the summer here. I've been here every day with members of my administrative team and teachers. We're a small school, and our administrators are also all teachers as well. So we think about this as a teacher would, and are daily making plans to make our school safe and welcoming for our students who really haven't been in the building en masse since March 13th, that day that we all went home into quarantine. So we're looking forward to their return in August, and knowing that it's going to be a challenge and that we're going to have to do things differently than we've ever done them before. But we're ready. We're hopeful, and we're excited, and we're trying to just approach this with all the energy that we have to make it work well.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll talk more about that, but we sort of launched into the nuts and bolts of what you have going on. I'd love to hear about what brought you to the Weilerman School and what you've done in the past that is going to be transferable there.
Yeah, sure. We started the school 10 years ago, and I was part of the founding group of faculty that opened the school in 2010. Prior to that, I was teaching in Atlanta. I was teaching at a K-12 private school in Atlanta, taught there for about 3 years, and taught English, high school English, and was a dean of students. Prior to that, I was back here in Utah teaching. I was down at the Waterford School in Salt Lake, and that's where I began my career and spent about 14 years as a middle and high school English teacher and the dean of the middle school there. So I came to this as kind of an experiment. There were a group of people that I knew well, friends and colleagues, that were part of this, the founding of this school, and they convinced me to take the leap to be a part of this charter school, which was something I had not been familiar with prior to that. I hadn't really, worked with charter schools in any way, and so that was a new thing. And we opened the school here at the top of Parley's Canyon, and 10 years we've been here now, and we feel like we've become an important part of this community and really love it up here. I have always been a teacher, even during those times when I've also been an administrator, and that's a big piece of our success here at Wileman is that all of our administrators are also teachers, teaching at least a half-time load and doing full-time administrative work. And so I think just in terms of how we think about any situation that comes our way, we always look at it from the point of view of a teacher in the classroom. And so I'm, approaching this the same way and like I said, trying to do it with a lot of collaboration with colleagues and that sort of thing.
Okay. And talk about a little bit about what you've been teaching there.
Well, I am an English teacher and have taught, actually since the school opened, I've also been a history teacher and worked with a community service program, but primarily English, that's been my focus. I teach sixth grade English and have taught seventh grade as well. In our school here, we do a lot of literature, so I love teaching Shakespeare. We, with our sixth graders, we read a variety of really fantastic novels, The Hobbit, and then there were none by Agatha Christie, Midsummer Night's Dream. We teach A Raisin in the Sun, a great play by Lorraine Hansberry, and just a really rich literary curriculum. And that's where my love is. I come from a background where I just love to sit around and talk about books and get kids talking about books. So that's been a big part of what I've done here as a teacher.
Okay. And it looks like off of your resume, you've also been awarded the Humanities Folger Award from Georgetown University in support of Shakespeare in the classroom.
Yeah.
So,
I spent a summer. That was a fantastic summer back in the early 2000s at the Folger Library in Washington, D.C. I spent about 6 weeks there through a National Endowment for the Humanities grant and just basically lived in the Folger Shakespeare Library, which it's a library that houses the most extensive collection of documents written at the time Shakespeare was writing his plays. They have some of his original sort of manuscripts there, or early manuscripts, but it's mainly a collection of other things written at the same time that sort of inform the plays and inform some of the cultural, social, political aspects of life in London and England when Shakespeare was writing his plays. So I spent the summer there. We read four plays and did a lot of research down in the deep archives in the basement of that building and saw a lot of plays, and just, it was a fantastic summer. And that has, my background is more sort of American studies, cultural studies. And so I actually did not take a lot of Shakespeare classes in high school or college, but that was sort of my sort of big introduction to Shakespeare as an academic discipline, and just loved it and I've loved it ever since. And so, we take our kids down to the Shakespeare Festival each fall, here at school, our eighth graders, and each year they read at least one Shakespeare play and really dig into it and perform sections of it, memorize pieces of it. And so we love Shakespeare here, and we love getting our kids excited about it. And surprisingly, yeah, they actually do get excited about Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. It's not as daunting as maybe they imagine it is before they, start reading. And, yeah, and we try to make it fun. And
yeah. Well, so let's kind of move on to talking a little bit about the COVID response. And just, we've had a chance in the last week or two to talk with two of our larger school districts in our listening area, the Wasatch School District and the Park City School District, about, oh gosh, all of the things that are going into place, distancing and hygiene practices and changes in schedules. And what does it look like for the Wileman School for returning to school that you know, people would maybe be interested in knowing the differences. Yeah. What should they expect?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're a small school. We're about 600 students, K through 8, and we are trying to be as flexible as we can without breaking. We know that our parents have a variety of needs in terms of their own children and what they do during the day, and so we've tried to offer up a number of options that allow for our parents to do what they feel is best for their child and is safe and what their child needs. And so we're offering an in-person sort of traditional classroom where students can come in and be in our classes like they typically are, of course, with increased cleaning protocols and wearing masks and face shields and things like that. But we also know that some of our students are not able to come either because they are, you know, immunocompromised, or they have maybe a family member who is, or they just get sick for some other reason. Maybe it's not even COVID. So we are offering the option any day. They can do it one day a week. They can do it 3 days, 5 days, whatever works for them. They can join classes synchronously through their Chromebooks. And we do provide Chromebooks for all of our students. So if a student is not able to come into the school, they will join live classes. We have set up all of our classrooms with a Chromebook that will be sort of trained on what's going on in class, on the teacher, on the board, wherever it needs to be, and students can join that class. We got a lot of practice in the spring with using some of the technology that will help us do that. The Google Classroom and some of the features that it offers to include those students who are at home in a really direct and productive way. And then, of course, if we come to the point where, you know, Summit County or the state of Utah says, hey, we need to go into quarantine mode again, we are ready for, you know, a full online classroom if it comes to that again. But initially, we'll start with this sort of in-class, in-person, with the option to join whenever you want to. We're not asking our parents to commit to one or the other. We're acknowledging that things change daily for parents and their families, and that we want to provide that option for them as they need it.
Okay, it's like your classes will be simulcast basically for access through their Chromebooks?
Absolutely.
Okay,
yes,
great.
That's the plan.
So what do you see? I mean, you've got 600 students, you said. Now, are you looking to enroll more students, or are you full up?
You know, we have a cap the state, we're in agreement with the state. I think our cap is just a little over 600, maybe 635. So we have a little bit of wiggle room there. And we're seeing really good enrollment numbers this year. And so I think, yes, there's always a chance that someone could get in, but I think we are filling up and coming close to that cap. So,
mm-hmm. There have been anecdotally a lot of people in town, people who are coming from their homes in other distant towns and cities claiming they're going to move here now for some period of time to wait out the COVID pandemic. Are you finding many of that situation? Are you finding that very frequently?
Absolutely. In fact, just yesterday, I visited with two different families who visited the school, one from Georgia and one from Texas. Last week, we had three families come in from Houston, I want to say Connecticut. They're coming from all over and finding in Park City a place to land and settle in, a place that feels a little more, maybe a little more wide open. I don't know. They all come with different reasons, but I think they do certainly like the outdoor environment here in Park City. And our school we're a big outdoor school. We love to get our kids outside as often as possible. And I think they look to that and see that as a really healthy option. So. But definitely seen more people coming in visiting from out of state than I think we ever have before.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to have to wrap this up. What anything else that you'd like to say?
I just look at this. I was thinking about your sort of metaphors for preparation, and I think our preparation for this goes back into those 10 years where we've really expected from our faculty to be creative and independent And we talk with them daily, all the time. We are in collaboration with our faculty, and I think that has built trust and that shared responsibility of leadership with them. And I think it helps us during times like this. And so, like I said, we're hopeful, we're excited, we're not every question is answered, but we know that we'll be able to do it with the group of people we have here. So,
okay, well, keep us posted about how things go. Thank you for coming on this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you, Carolyn.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.
That is Steve Williams. He is the new Weilman School of Discovery Executive Director. It is 8:44, and our last guest for this local news hour is Heber City Mayor Colleen Potter. She is joining us to give us a little bit of an update on the Heber City Council and the meeting that you had this week. And one of the issues that rose out of the controversy last year when the Pride banners were displayed on Main Street has become somewhat of an active discussion there last night, I guess. Are you there, Colleen? Thank you for joining us, Colleen.
Discussion is an accurate description. It took us probably an hour and a half.
Colleen, I'm sorry. I just had you on the wrong line. Thank you for joining us. I don't think you were broadcasting. Can you give us an update of the banners and just what's happening with that conversation in the city council?
Yes, I am happy to. Can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
So after the controversy with the Pride banners, members of our city council decided they wanted to create a deliberate policy around what type of banners or what we're going to do with banners on Main Street. And so there was a conversation in a work meeting a couple weeks ago, and this was on the regular meeting. There were many, many comments from the public. The vast majority were supporting the ability to hang the Pride banners. And the council is going to move forward in the next meeting with a vote. It's looking like they're going to create a policy that would not allow any banners that aren't specifically like for city events or maybe national holidays. They didn't really talk a lot about it after the conversation with the public, but that's what it looks like is going to happen in the next meeting.
Okay. Now, it was interesting. There were some comments that discussed the slippery slope of venturing into political issues. And I guess some people feel that a flag representing a group of people is a political statement. But where do you draw the line? I mean, this is a tough question. The flag, our American flag has been made political. What's the difference, I guess?
And it is so tricky because I have tried to say this isn't a political issue. This is an issue that one of the top three issues identified by our high school students that they deal with is mental health issues. And the data shows that when you're more accepting of diversity, particularly there's studies showing if you accept LGBT kids in a community, that the mental health is better for all kids. It's a canary in the coal mine type issue. And so there are people who are saying this is a political issue, but I don't see it that way. And so it's really difficult because a lot of the pressure on our council members is coming from people privately. Most of the public conversation and is supportive of the banners, although there's clearly some that's not. But people are saying it's political, and I'm trying to say, how do you define political? Because there's not an advocacy for a particular law or policy. It's within the community, and the people that see it are messages I get from even a lot of high school students saying, thank you, this makes us feel like people accept us and we're okay. And so it is a tricky issue, and I get that there's a lot of pressure on the council and they don't want other issues to come up that become, you know, point counterpoint on Main Street and make it a battleground for other issues that people see as political.
Has a draft policy been written at this point?
Yes, there is a draft policy, and that is, I believe, on the agenda materials from the last meeting. People could read the staff report and see what the staff had come up with, and then there will be something written and posted with the next week the next meeting materials that people can see. What they come up with.
And is it a situation where people are still able to give their opinion and input on the policy, or is that portion
absolutely.
Of the...
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
If people want, they can either email the council, they can still make comments in the next meeting. We also read any public comments that come to this email, ccpublic@heberut.gov. We read those into the record. That's what took so long last time. So there's still opportunity for people to speak out on their feelings about this issue.
Yeah. Okay. And at last night's meeting, did you get a sense of what the overall sentiment is? I mean, was it kind of a divided opinion that was being expressed, or did it lean one side or the other?
From the council or the public?
From the public.
The public definitely, there were far more comments supportive of the ability to hang the Pride banners and just be able to make that statement as a community. That was publicly, of course. I don't know about privately. I mean, I get anonymous letters that are really unkind. So to me personally, so I'm sure that there's people who don't support that. I know there are, but publicly in that meeting, the vast majority, I'd say, I don't know, 80% probably in that meeting were in support of the banners.
Okay. Okay. So let's move on to the to Heber's COVID-19 response. The council moved to accept Heber's share of the Federal CARES Act funding, just shy of $1.5 million. And there are some caveats in accepting that money. The city must agree to only use the funds to directly respond to the COVID-19 health emergency. And the money cannot be used to offset any city revenue shortfalls due to the pandemic. What will that money be covering immediately in Heber?
Immediately, it's covering, we had to put some of those plexiglass, you know, separators in the offices where the public comes. One thing that's just come up is our little local theater that brings people to downtown can't do their play indoors, so they're doing it outdoors, and we're going to use just a little bit of money to help them because they have to create a whole new stage and a sound system, and that's an economic development type thing that comes down and brings people down to support local businesses. A lot of PPE for the police, those type of things, but it's not that number. We don't have an amount that approaches that number. We are supposed to anticipate future expenses through the end of December. There is some opportunity to help support economic development. So we're just in the process of looking carefully at expenses that have been incurred by COVID. And that's where we are. We don't really have a number approaching that at this point.
Oh, you don't have the $1.5 million. Oh, excuse me. Okay.
No, we accepted it. But what will happen is if we don't have that number by December, we will return the money. And that's likely at least a portion will be returned because it doesn't look like the number will be that high. But we had to just accept it, and then we'll see what it adds up to.
Can the funds go towards supporting small businesses that are impacted?
My understanding at this point is that yes, it can.
Okay, and which businesses, can you give a, you don't have to name the businesses, but which ones are, the line of businesses that are in the most dire need?
Businesses that mainly tourists come, restaurants, some of those things that in the summer, rentals, places like that where a lot of people typically come from out of the community to support them, and that it's not happening right now. There's some businesses that are doing just fine, but those type businesses that depend a lot on outside revenues are the ones that are struggling the most.
Okay, and does council disperse those funds, or is that done through another department?
Well, they will all be brought through council and presented, but the Chamber of Commerce has been dealing directly with the businesses, and there's some conversation about the county funds and our city funds and how they're going to support that. And it's still pretty early in the process, so I don't have a lot of detail on how it's going to play out.
Okay. Well, keep us posted. And so people are applying, though, right now. Is that correct?
Not for the city's portion yet.
Okay. Okay. To come. More details to come.
Yeah, we're looking at what some other communities have been doing. Apparently, in the chamber meeting last week, they were looking at what Vernal's been doing, and they're further ahead of us in this, and so we're still figuring it out.
Okay. On that note of tourism and people visiting, what have you found? Because in Park City, it's very busy. Our trails are packed. Frequently, Main Street is very busy with traffic and people, and what's happening in Heber and the area in general?
You know, overall, our sales tax revenues have been fine. We only had 1 month that dipped below where we were last year. We are seeing on the train, here's a good example, we have about 65% of the riders are locals, which typically it's the opposite. It's more people from out of state and tourists. So we're seeing a lot of people coming from the Wasatch Front, maybe just closer, people that aren't traveling as far, more in the distance of driving distance, as opposed to people that might be flying and maybe even staying in Park City and coming to Heber to ride the train and do some things like that. So we are still seeing activity. It's not as bad as I think what we anticipated it would be, particularly with our sales tax revenues, so that's good news.
Okay. Let's talk about the Transit Study. Council reviewed the findings from a transit study that explored future public transportation options in Wasatch County, which included expanding local service in Heber and Midway, and then also Heber to Park City routes, and then Heber to Utah County commuter lines and van pool services, that type of thing. What was the discussion there, and where do you go from here?
Yeah, so we had a presentation from MAG, the Mountain Land Association of Governments, who participated and had the consultant there online with this study. Initially, it was Mayor Bierman and Mayor Johnson from Midway and myself that said, we need to really look into this, and so that's kind of how this came about. But obviously, it's a big number to do all of that. We just looked and said, okay, where do people travel? What are the numbers? What is needed? And that's why we looked at all these different aspects. Kind of the takeaway was, A, right now is not a good time because of COVID. A lot more people are working from home. People who might normally ride a bus probably wouldn't right now because of the proximity and the difficulty of making sure that they're safe. So the first step would likely be a pilot project between Heber City and Park City. And the council's interested in looking at that when the time is right. But that would probably be step one, and kind of like when Park City did the pilot project with Camas. Obviously, we're a vehicle-based community. You know, it'd be difficult for someone to live here that didn't have access to a vehicle. So there's a shift in thinking and in using public transportation. So that would be the place to start and to see how that would go. I mean, the estimate is, you know, Wasatch County or Heber City would contribute $200,000 to do something like that, and we would have two routes in the morning, one in the midday and two in the evening. That would be step one. And also increasing the van pool between Wasatch and Utah counties, maybe for teachers or other businesses that are bringing people up from Utah County. Mm-hmm. But the council said, yeah, we need to move forward, but not right this minute. So we just need to give it a little time to see what happens with COVID.
Yeah, and it would involve a quarter cent tax on sales and that type of thing, I guess, right? So
yeah, there's different taxes that are available for counties and cities to implement for this transportation. And because we haven't done it, it would be something that has to come to be able to get the revenue to do it.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about the meeting that people know?
One interesting thing we talked about in our work meeting is ranked choice voting. Utah legislature has given cities the option to use ranked choice voting in their municipal elections. Only two cities did it last year, but Heber is seriously considering it. Our council seems very open to the notion, and we'll have it again on a regular agenda meeting. So that's an interesting way of doing elections that might change some things in our state.
Yeah, interesting, especially after this last primary election, huh?
Yes, exactly. That would have been
so many candidates, right?
Election. Yes.
Well, great. Okay. Oh, and just I wanted to find out. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to mention that. On Monday at 10, well, tonight we have our concert in the park, which we're doing socially distanced, and we have hula hoops set out in the area around the concert, so everyone comes with their group and stays in a socially distanced area just to try and create some opportunities for people to get out. On Monday at 10, we're launching our Art in Public Places efforts through our Community Alliance on Main Street. We're starting a mural being painted on the chamber tourism building as you come into Heber, and it's already started, but we're going to have a little kickoff on Monday just to try and create some of that interest and energy with art in public places. And I just wanted to let people know that if they want to come out for that.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask about. Thank you for joining us, Colleen.
Thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate being here.
Okay, take care now.
You too.
Bye-bye.
It is 8:59, going on 9 o'clock. This has been the Local News Hour. I'm Carolyn Murray. Stay safe and be sure to stay with KPCW through the day. We've got the Cool Science Radio program coming up right after NPR. You have been listening to KPCW Park City.